Dave, I got to tell you, I've started teaching yet another semester of storytelling at University of the Arts.
Okay.
This one is virtual, of course, much like last semester. I'm doing everything through Zoom. And it's meant a little bit of an adaptation or adaptation
from last semester to this one.
Yeah, because so much of my class has to do with standing up and telling a story orally to a group of people, and there's a lot that happens there consciously and subconsciously in that action.
Sure.
That you can use to make yourself a better writer. That's
basic stuff like positioning yourself around the room at different points.
Yep.
How you express your physicality both in hand motion and in major muscle groups. Yeah, absolutely. Ooh.
There's so much that, and just also how quickly a conversation can happen. Because Zoom, it does a really good job, but you can't have two people talking over each other.
You absolutely cannot. And it's funny you should mention that, because my wife and I were talking last night about how, because she runs her TV writer's room over Zoom,
mm-hmm.
and how there is a millisecond delay. That means everyone hesitates to jump in,
yes.
because no one wants to jump on top of somebody else. But the funny thing is that ruins the natural flow of back and forth and pitching, you know? And so anyway,
keep going. That millisecond kills creativity.
It kills conversation. Yeah. So keep going.
So at any rate, I'm struggling with how to convey this orality part of storytelling in a Zoom environment. And also, like you pointed out, secondarily, I'm struggling with how to replace my physically being in the room with them, and then there's just the problems with dealing with, you know, seamlessly doing a screen share to bring up a slide or a video,
But also, it's also mourning the loss of these poor students not getting the physical presence of Brad Geiger in the room. I mean, that's what they're paying for.
That's a big part of it.
It's like being in a room with Brad Pitt. It's like all of a sudden there's just an energy. You feel it. It crackles, you know?
you're right. I won't even joke about it. You're right.
That crackling is mostly you eating the Funyuns, frankly, to be fair.
Yes. Yeah, most of that is cellophane wrap, but the rest of it is me. But you are right. There is something about that, and I'm trying to figure out how to do that. And like we talked about in one of the episodes a while ago, like a lot of them are coming in with this idea that they're paying for like a $24,000 streaming service, which is an oversimplification. But it's also, they're not wrong. You know,
they're not wrong.
What they're getting over streaming. So with that in mind, I try to give them the best experience I can give out of just my own sense of fair play. And also because this country still hasn't gotten its act straight, we're probably going to be needing to do this the next semester too. So I want this to be a high quality experience for them. So I went out and bought a ring light at your suggestion.
Yep.
I'm well lit. I've thought about set dressing. Down to the earphones. Now, right now, I've got over-the-ear headphones.
Are you doing me a favor and positioning your camera 5 or so degrees above your eye line?
Yes.
Great.
Yes.
Oh, great. Yeah. Good.
It's not below, so they're looking up my nose.
Yeah, because Brad and I both have sweet, sweet in-laws that you call them on FaceTime, and it's just the nostril show. It's just like, hi, how are you? Oh, it's good. Let me see the grandbabies. And it's just nostril. It's all nostril.
I was in a formal Zoom meeting with, in a business sense, we'll say, and the president he was looking down at his laptop. it was his nose up at the bottom one quarter of the screen. And as I explained later to a colleague, a view of his ceiling that I would have hoped was reserved for a precious few members of his intimate circle. It was just nothing but nostril and ceiling. And it's like, I never wanted this view.
Can I interrupt your story for one second? Because Glow and I, she being a television producer as well as a writer, we marvel at the fact that we are now how many months? 6 months, 7 months into this pandemic? No matter what news program you turn on, right? Anytime they bring a guest on, Brad, where are the talent production line coordinators, like, getting on the line with them 5 seconds before they go on CNN or MSNBC or Fox or whatever and saying, get a better light source, slightly better camera angle, stop holding your camera with your hand, you don't realize that you're shaking. Like, what? Some of these people...
out.
Like, how are we 7 months into a pandemic and no one's figured out their camera angles yet? Like, you're going to be on CNN. Get a better light source.
David, how are we 7 months into a pandemic and nobody's figured out masks yet? Forget about the fucking lighting. How come we haven't figured masks out?
So Brad, anyway, I laugh because we're all going to die.
So I'm all of this to say, instead of the over-the-ear headphones like I've got right now, which I like over-the-ear, they're comfortable, blah, blah, blah. Because I want them to have the best, and I'm serious, I've thought this all the way through, I want them to have the best experience.
Sure.
I even went out, down to this, I got the wireless ear pod things, not the Apple ones. They're an off-brand, but they're wireless earbuds that you put inside your ear. Okay. Yep. So I've thought about all of this and I am very proudly now going through, I think, my third lecture of the semester. I'm well into Hero's Journey. I'm going through, I'm flipping back and forth screen share, showing clips from Star Wars to exemplify Hero's Journey, yada, yada, yada. And as I'm giving my lecture, I hear over the Zoom, battery is low. And I paused and I said, okay, now remember, folks, we do need to keep our mute on as I'm talking, as I'm lecturing, and somebody's phone or something needs to be plugged in. I don't want to lose you. So take a moment, whomever's battery out there is getting low, and just plug that in. Okay, so we can go. And I go back onto
I'm
a gallop.
I'm feeling the comeuppance coming. Here we go. All right.
Back up to a gallop, and I'm going back about the hero's journey, meeting with the mentor, tests, allies, and enemies, ordeal, and battery is low. Okay, folks, listen, honestly.
Okay,
I need you to work with me here. Somebody's phone, you got to be on mute. And I don't have time. There's 20, 30 of them in there. I don't have time to figure out which one of you needs to be on mute. You need to be on mute. And for the love of Christ, put your phone in a cord, but so with your battery.
Oh, God.
And I go on with the ba-da-ba-ba-da-ba-ba-da-ba. So finally, I get to one point, and I've been just unilaterally lecturing all this time. Finally, I get to one point, and I figured I'll throw a question out there. And I ask my question, and I call on a student. The student unmutes his microphone, I can see, and he says this. Did you hear that? Neither
no.
did I, because my earphones, the batteries were dead.
Oh my God. Oh, Grandpa. Oh.
So, yeah.
So, this is what you get for buying off brand Schmapple headphones.
Oh my God. They don't even make it 3 hours. I got 6 hours of class time. They don't even make it. I had it plugged in. But, yeah, the whole time I was hearing batteries low, it was my own earbuds. And by the time I tried to hear somebody, now I had to, you know, call a break and move things around and. Oh, maybe I shouldn't be teaching. Maybe I should be learning.
Oh, Brad. Oh my God. I love the idea that for it's like Napoleon with the nail, you know, for lack of a nail, the whole thing. But like for lack of a $10 purchase, and you saved $10 and bought the $130 Schmapple headphones instead of the $140 Apple headphones, and by doing so lost an entire
Listen,
class.
My cheapness doesn't extend to $10. These things were $40.
Oh, what savings as you have to switch headphones mid-class.
To switch back to my USB over-the-ear, I look like I'm working air traffic control headphones for the rest of the class.
Oh my God, there's nothing funnier because I have it happen all the time in my life though with it. Can everyone please can you and then you're the cause of the problem.
Yes. Oh, I hate that. There's nothing I hate more. Because by the second time I was getting downright condescending, as you know I'm capable of.
class, we really need to mute ourselves. Class, battery is low. Oh, it's me. I'm the one.
Yeah,
I'm
my battery is low.
On that note, I'm going to say hello, everybody, and welcome to Comic Lab, the show about making comics.
And making a living from low batteries. I'm Brad Geiger, editor of webcomics.com and the creator of Evil Inc.
And I'm his pal, Dave Kellett, cartoonist of Drive and Sheldon and the co-director of Stripped.
And this week's Hour of Comics Advice is made possible by your support at patreon.com/comiclab. So Dave, let's talk about some good news.
Some good news. All right.
I got a great email just this week from a young guy named Tom Maloney.
Okay.
And he says, by the way, fun fact, this was in a longer email. But we're going to skip down to the by the way. By the way, says Tom, fun fact, you and Dave might get a kick out of. In episode 39 of Comic Lab, I think we're up to 142 or so. This was a while back. Okay. Episode 39, first year of Comic Lab, my then girlfriend, another Patreon backer, sent an email in, which you guys read. The question was something along the lines of, and tell me if you remember this, quote, I don't draw comics, but my partner does. How do I support them in this situation? Unquote.
Oh, I remember this email because we were touched about how sweet it was. It was like, how do I best support my artist compatriot or whatever it was?
That's,
you know?
That's how you remember it, us being touched. The way he remembers it is you and Dave spent a huge chunk of the podcast calling me a dummy. for quote, not putting a ring on it, unquote. Which I think probably
well,
came from...
Well, that's part of it, though. We were probably saying, what else are you looking for with someone this kind?
Yeah, and he can confirm this, he says. Tom says, I know this because she quotes you all the time when she's wiggling her ring finger in my face. Well, we're getting married on October 1st.
Hey, hooray,
so
really?
To you, Geiger, I say, now who's the dummy?
Hey, that's great.
So congratulations to Tom Maloney and Carrie Shearman, who are getting married thanks to a Comic Lab intervention on October 1st.
Carrie, first of all, I remember your kind note, and
yes.
Thank you for that, and thank you for putting up with Tom while he figured out that you were the best thing to ever happen to him. So that's great. That really warms my heart. That's really delightful news.
Yeah, that I knew you were gonna love that. And you know, do keep us keep us in touch as you go through life. You know, let us know how things are going. Because this is an official Comic Lab marriage now. We put our stamp on this one, right?
I more than anything else, Tom and Carrie, if you're comfortable doing it, send us a photo from the wedding. I know I'm not sentimental about weddings, but this does make me happy.
Yes.
And I would love to see you guys smiling on one of the best days of your life. So first of all, congratulations. Second of all, thank you for listening. And third, I do hope you sent us a photo from the big day. That's great. Congratulations.
And talking of things that make us happy, let's talk about our sponsor for this show, Wacom, maker
of... Look at that transition. Oh, hey, okay. And if you're the good folks at Wacom listening right now, how about you? This is what you're paying for, the patented Brad Geiger transitions.
That's
speaking
right,
of
that's
weddings,
right.
I know what I want to put a ring on, and that's the Wacom.com finger.
Speaking of wedding rings, you know, the nice thing I like about that Wacom is they have those little colored rings that you can put on your stylus.
Speaking about making a commitment at the altar, I'll tell you what I'd make a commitment to, the good folks at Wacom.
You know, speaking of altars, one thing I don't want to alter is my relationship with Wacom, maker of the Wacom One.
Speaking of I do use my Wacom every day, and I love it.
You know, speaking on how Tom has found his one, I'd like to talk about when I found my one, the Wacom One.
Hey-o, that one wins. So a big shout-out and a thank you to the Wacom sponsorship over at WACOM.com. And Bradley J. Geiger, let's jump into the week.
Well, listen, here's something I want to talk about right off the bat, and I'm seeing it more and more, and we've noted we're 7 months. What do you say? What was the official start of the pandemic? Was it March when we started getting serious about this?
In L.A., it was, I know it was earlier in Washington, upstate Washington, but in L.A., it was like mid-March.
March, April, May, June, July, August, September. So let's say we're 7 months into this pandemic. This is something that I've always been against, that now, and I brought it up earlier on one of the shows. I want to bring it up again because not only am I against it in general, I'm super against it now. And that is, we need to talk about this. Nobody wants to support you on Patreon. All right. If your outreach right now is support me on Patreon, I think you're making a big mistake. I think you have to remember or put yourself in the shoes of who's receiving your message.
Okay.
More and more people are trying to figure out how they're going to support themselves. They don't want a message saying that I want you to support me. They don't want that message. They're handling supporting themselves. Here's what they're looking for, however. They're looking for entertainment, and they are willing to pay for entertainment. There's no shortage of streaming services going out of business right now because people are not willing to pay for entertainment. They're willing to pay for entertainment, and they're looking for a community. They're looking for someplace they can be a part of. And I'm telling you why this is extra, extra important right now. We're coming into a point right now, and perhaps in the United States, the presidential election is even bringing this into harsh relief. But people are really starting to get underwhelmed, disappointed, frustrated with social media. It isn't the social aspect that they were hoping it was going to be.
Right.
In fact, it's brought out for a lot of people all the negative parts of social interaction and not enough of the positive. People are frustrated with not finding their community on social media. They're not finding a group that they can be part of in social media. Those are the two things people are looking for right now. Here's what's going on. They don't want to support you. They don't know how they're going to support themselves. And what they're looking for is entertainment. And they're looking for a community. That's why you should take support me on Patreon off of all of your outgoing messaging and replace it with a very simple replacement that's 10 times more powerful. Join us on Patreon. Join us. We're a community. Like we talked about on the show a while ago, I'm having a party in this Patreon. You can be part of it. And it's very easy to get into it. Join us on Patreon, in my opinion, is 10 times more powerful and has way less baggage than support me. What do you think, Dave Kellett?
Yeah, I think for a lot of reasons that you mentioned in terms of, I mean, we're looking at, 8% unemployment right now in the U.S., which is historically still not great. And I think that roughly translates to 13 or 14 million people unemployed at the moment. And even aside from that, there's just a low-level anxiety and economic anxiety, even from the people that have a job. Even if you're super well-employed, you're worried about your cousins. You're worried about what family members you might be have to step up and support, you know, if you're not doing it already. You're worried about the friends that you might have to step up and support, your overall social network. So it's a weird time to say support because you're like, don't ask me for support. I might have to support like five of my cousins. Like, don't put this on me, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, you couldn't choose a worse word than support right now.
Yeah. And then also, just purely from a marketing standpoint, the language of join us, bing, bing, you're off on a strong action word, join, which is a big emotional trigger, but also you're in and out in two syllables, which, as we all know from titling any project, the less syllables you can get into a movie title, the more powerful it is as a title, right?
Yeah.
And so think of support me on Patreon, how many syllables that is versus join us, ba-boom, you're out, you know, that kind of thing. And so for reasons both big and small emotionally, I think, Brad, you're smart to bring this up. I think this is a good point.
Yeah, I think, and it's an easy one to do, right? It's got a whole lot more positive connotations. So just consider that. Take out support me. Try taking it. And what'll happen when you change to join us, you're going to change how you talk about your Patreon as well. You're going to stop talking about it quite so much as what's in it for me. You're going to start talking about it as in terms of what's in it for you, the potential backer. And that's also a much more positive and more compelling statement. So many people talk about Patreon. They start telling you what's in it for me, the artist. Here's what will happen when you support me. I'll get this. I'll get this. I'll get that. Again, talk about a counterintuitive, non-compelling marketing. What this person who's given up the dollars wants to hear is, what do I get for my dollars?
Right.
And when you change to join us, you're going to start changing how you talk about it.
And I will say that even if you are, even if a percentage of your backers are the kind of people that don't really want any of the stuff, they do just want to support you. Yeah. And I know those exist because sometimes that person person is me. Sometimes I will support a Kickstarter or a Patreon just because I honestly want to support them. I don't really want the thing. I just want to help them make it, you know, that kind of thing.
Same.
So I know that person exists emotionally, but a lot of the marketing that got me to that point where I was about to click support this Kickstarter was a join us kind of an appeal. Do you know what I mean, Brad?
Yeah.
Like, even though I ended up not wanting the thing physically, I don't want the book, I don't want the DVD, I don't want whatever it is, but the language of join us on Kickstarter got me to say, I actually just want to support them. So even if you use join us as the call to action, it's a much stronger point, even if they end up helping you just to support you.
Yes.
So, Brad, I want to jump us into the next question, and this comes in from Max over at patreon.com/comiclab. And Max writes, hi, Dave and Brad. I'm a storyboard artist who works in TV. By the way, we do have a fair number of storyboard artists, Brad, that listen to the show, which is interesting.
I love that.
I'm a storyboard artist who works in TV animation and have always loved creating comics. In storyboarding, there's a lot more character posing than you would find in comics. Makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And because of this, I sometimes find myself overposing characters in my comics. For example, too many panels and or poses for a single sentence or two of dialogue. Therefore, I was wondering if you two have any good tips as to how you plan out your character posing in your comics. Thanks so much for your advice and love the podcast. Brad, Max wants to know, and I get this because the day job doing storyboard work obviously calls for a lot of individual posing because storyboarding is like, let's get all these keyframes ready to go kind of a thing, you know? But how does he and the night job working comics that he loves, how does Max step away from the overposing of storyboarding into the pick the best moment of comics for that single panel?
I have a hard time giving advice on this because I firmly believe and based on the comics that I see and the stuff I look in on and read throughout a given week. I firmly believe that your garden variety comics artist has exactly the opposite problem, that they don't do enough posing, that they don't break up those word balloons enough. They're trying to get away with as few illustrations as possible and with huge word balloons or multiple word balloons to cram as much in there as you can get. So I actually don't want to discourage Max from this. I want more poses in a comic that I read. Now if you're getting to the point.
Something about this makes me laugh. I can't get enough poses. Keep them coming. I just shovel them into my comics. I want all the poses you can give me, Max.
This is delicious. Because I really do believe that there. If you're getting to the point where you've got multiple poses per sentence, then that's obviously a problem.
And I think that's what Max is leaning towards is that I feel like he's saying that everything the character is doing has a unique pose. And, you know, like we know what that comic is. It's kind of like what's the comic strip Chickweed Lane? Do you remember that one?
I remember Chickweed Lane. Yeah. That was a newspaper comic and it had a lot of interesting takes on imagery that I don't know that I would have used in a newspaper comic.
Chickweed Lane had a lot of unique choices for a newspaper comic strip. But one of the things I remember is that for the Sunday comics, it was a lot of posing for a single front sentence. And you're like, what's happening?
I'll tell you what was happening.
But, okay, so for Max, I think the question here is editing, right?
Yeah.
And Max, you know this but as a storyboard artist, is that you have tens of thousands of moments that you could choose for what storyboard frames you're going to isolate out, right? And then for comics, you need to get down from those, you know, thousands in your mind down to hundreds, and then you're going to pick the dozens that are best and then draw the half dozen that work for whatever that comic is, you know? Mm-hmm. So it really is a matter of editing where not every single nuance of human emotion has to be expressed. You have to find the key moment, the moment that locks in both the moment of expression for that panel and that transitions you to the next panel.
Right.
And so that is just an editing choice of like finding the moment that best expresses the point and prepares the reader and the transition to the next panel.
Maybe we can kill two birds with one stone here, because when I read comics in general, and I've said this on this show 100 times, what most of us, me included, need to work on much, much more is our writing, especially if you're doing anything with any element of humor, right? Yeah. The writing is should be the focus, should be the main thing. Mm-hmm. And if we've got somebody like this particular person, this Max, who says that I keep doing all these poses, maybe it's telling me that he's putting more emphasis on the art than the writing. And maybe if we also encourage Max to give more thought to the writing itself, like what are the mechanics of this joke? Let's say he's doing something that ends on a punchline. Okay. And we can extrapolate it for other things as well, but let's take this just because my spidey sense says we might be talking about humor here. Let's say it ends on a punchline. You need to spend a bunch more time than you're probably spending now figuring out what's the best punchline, what's the best way to make that gag work, what's the best way to set up that gag. And if you spend a little bit more time on the writing, that's going to gel not only how does that setup and punchline structure work for the writing, but now that you've spent that extra time on the writing, how is the best way to draw that? And that extra time you spent in crafting the writing is going to be reflected in now you have a better understanding of how that joke works, how that punchline works. And now since you've done that mental legwork, the illustration is going to fall a little bit more into play. And because you've taken up that extra time writing, any deadline you've set for yourself is going to loom. You're not going to have as much time to screw around. You're going to have to get down to business.
The problem is, as you and I both know, nobody draws faster than anybody, than folks in animation.
Yeah.
So Max could crank out a 48-page comic in the time it takes you and I to do a panel. Yes. But I mean, that's also part of the problem is for Max, drawing is not the limiter. You know what I mean? And so for him, it's like it's like when you're holding a hammer and every problem looks like a nail.
Yep.
For Max, when your art skills are so good that you are very quick and proficient at getting a comic out because you're really quick and proficient at getting storyboards out, the problem looks like it could be fixed by just drawing more. I'm just going to keep drawing. Right, that's going to make the comic better. But Brad's right that it really in this question, it is the reverse of what we normally have, which is that you need to work on your writing and editing to make the drawing more self-evident as to which key panels you need to draw, you know?
Yeah.
And like Brad said, it's funny because we come from the other side of the equation more often, which is that for folks who draw slower or for whom art is a little bit trickier, they come from a writing perspective. They'll try to write their way out of it. And then it's one single panel.
Oh, yeah.
With just a sea of text in that panel. And so this is interesting to have the opposite side of it. But which is basically, the short version of this is whatever strengths you come to comics with, you'll start to use them more and more as a crutch. And you have to develop systems, like Brad was saying, to get off of that crutch. And in Brad's case, I think he has the right idea, which is if you really work on the writing and whittling down the script, that's where you're going to find that the key panels jump out at you. Hey, if you're listening while you work, take a minute to stand and stretch.
And while you're doing that, we're going to tell you why you should join us on Patreon.
When you do, you're going to get hours and hours of podcasts that we've recorded just for backers.
And exclusive Patreon posts that go even deeper on Comic Lab topics.
And access to our exclusive Discord server, which is a thriving community of professional cartoonists.
So you can support the show you love and get tons of actionable resources for your own cartooning.
And listen, if you can't swing a pledge this month, we get it. No worries.
Yeah, listen, you can still support the show by rating us wherever you get your podcasts.
Just leave a 5-star review and a few kind words.
That, along with mentions on social media, is incredibly helpful.
Now, everybody, let's talk comics.
You know, Dave, since we've been talking a little bit about the pandemic, and I was thinking about this when we were counting out the number of months and so forth, we talked about the pandemic a little while ago. Would you be interested in doing like a pandemic update during the show now? Like, where are you now in terms of your business, in terms of your mental stability, in terms of your emotional stability? Where are you now in week 7 of the pandemic?
I wish it were week seven, in month seven of the pandemic.
Oh, gosh, wishful thinking, yeah.
Although, because it's we're in the ever-present everyday, where, like, yeah. There's no significant event for your brain. No, like, literally, because, you know, your human brain processes time based on significant events. Yeah. And because we've had a lot of repeatable days,
yeah,
7 months kind of feels like a month and a half looking back on it. Like, I don't remember a lot of demonstratively cool things that I did over 7 months.
Well, and we have, like you said, I haven't really thought about it in this term, but we haven't had those milestones. Like, we didn't really have a Labor Day weekend.
Yeah,
you know, who was going to go any place for Labor Day weekend?
We didn't have a 4th of July parade or fireworks show you went to. Or...
Right. My kid didn't run isn't going to run the Broad Street Run, which is something that always is a marker.
The first day of school was more sad than anything else.
Yeah. I looked down the hallway at my two sons' bedrooms, both with the door shut. And I thought to myself, I at one point, Carolyn and I were like, at some point, we're going to have a freshman and a senior in high school. What's it going to look like? I didn't picture two doors shut down the hall.
Yeah, no, it's heartbreaking. So the yes, let's do an update because so we're 7 months in. I emotionally was doing okay. And then I was keeping it together in the sense of, you know, a pandemic is a lot of death by little cuts. You mm-hmm. know, it's like, well, I don't get to see my elderly parents for a while. Well, I don't they don't get to see their grandkids for a while. Well, yeah. There's a percentage of my friends that are out of work. And you kind of take on and tackle each loss. And then you kind of shelve it emotionally, mm-hmm. you know, try to steel yourself for your family and that kind of stuff. What broke me a little bit, though, Brad, this month. Was I was doing all right, and then the fires hit the West Coast, and I'm in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And we were not as bad as Seattle and Portland were, and San Francisco, but LA took it on the chin, and it really got my asthma. Mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, that freaking broke me. I was like, emotionally, I mean, like I had built up the hey, you're keeping it together, you're doing all right, everything's fine. 7 months into the pandemic, you're fine. And then what happened was, you know, you can't go, you can't see people. All right, fine. Yeah. You can't go to any of the stores or places you want to go to. Okay, fine. You can't go on vacation anywhere. Okay, fine. The U.S. passport is useless around the world because no one wants Americans to come. Okay, fine. Like you're dealing with all these tragedies. And then I couldn't even go outside to walk my dog, or I couldn't take the kids to the park, or I couldn't play ball out in the yard with them.
Yeah.
So now you're permanently stuck inside. You can't see any other people. And that was just the one more straw that kind of broke the back for me this past month or couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And boy, I also probably because smoke makes you lethargic, but mm-hmm. I couldn't get the muster to work, Brad. And it was a bummer. It was a real legitimate bummer.
Yeah. No, I so let me tell you how stupid my mind works. I was doing really well until earlier this week when I came to the studio to work and realized I hadn't brought my lunch with me. I hadn't brought anything for lunch and the refrigerator was bare. And I thought, "Oh, that's not a problem. I'll just go up to there's like a convenience store that has a really good deli." I'm like, "I'll just go down there and get a turkey burger down there." And I thought, I don't even want to walk into that place, you know. And we've been getting takeout food. We've been getting food delivered.
Right.
But if I walk in there and see that the cook doesn't have a mask, or that the that the cashier doesn't have a mask, or that the people inside don't have a mask, I'm gonna just turn right around and walk out. You know, I know this about myself. It's just gonna oog me out. And then I'm like, then my other choices were fast food and. That, you know, just is going to make me feel, I'll feel good while I'm eating it. And then I'll feel horrible a minute later, you know, as that stuff hits your stomach.
Right.
So I'm like, I can't do that. You know, my favorite diner, you know, closed years ago. Can't go to the diner. I wouldn't go to the diner even if I could. And then it starts sinking in. It's like a little thing like, what am I going to do to eat? I ended up not eating until I came back. Actually, this was yesterday because I was teaching. So I just didn't eat until it was time. And I was done with my classes and turned around and came back. And it's just, this is one of those really simple things. Like my parents are 80 years old. We go up and visit Michigan every year.
Yeah.
It really stunk not being able to go up there, knowing full well that they've been doing a really good job from what they tell me on the phone quarantining, but my extended family, I can tell, are not. Right. a lot of maskless shots on Facebook and stuff. And it's like, even if I had it wavered a bit, which, to be fair, I never, at that point, during the point that we usually visit, I was, you know, 100% dead against getting in the car. Because then it's also not only the end result, you know, who you're going to hang out with once you get there, but how many rest stops do you make along the way? How many pee breaks do you take?
Right. How many weird situations of like, oh, we absolutely have to go into this place or have to get gas from this place.
And plus, it's a 13-hour drive.
Right.
Half of the only fun in that is saying, oh, you know what? I think we're going to pull over to this restaurant.
Right, right.
Let's decide where we want to go over there. Let's have the kids find something on their iPhone. Let's teach them how to use Google Maps. None of that stuff was going to happen. And right. Then it just started piling up where I'm like, this situation and the poor way that it's been handled has stolen an entire year of our life. And yep. It's not over yet.
Oh, not by a long shot. And so the feeling that we're all feeling is grief.
Yeah.
Right? For everything in our life, like even for your parents, God bless them, 80 years old, yeah. My parents also in their 80s, they lived and worked hard and raised kids and grandkids, and they deserve to have the last years of their life be with visits with your kids, with my kids, with, you know, and they don't get that, and that's grief. And then we see our kids Zooming into class, and that's weird, and socially is unacceptable for teenagers. It's not great for kids that are in primary school and trying to develop, and that's grief. Mm-hmm. And then for ourselves, like, I can't walk outside without seeing a blood red sky from smoke, and then I can't talk to any of the people that I do see on the street because they're all that's grief. So anyway, the last couple weeks just broke me emotionally because I was like, God damn it. You suddenly realize that you are a lobster in a slowly boiling pot. And you know, what was acceptable a week or two ago suddenly becomes, gosh damn it, I don't want this anymore. So, anyway, go ahead. What are you going to say?
About business wise? How have you been doing in terms of being a professional cartoonist? How has that been during the pandemic in month seven?
Yeah, perfectly fine. Like the joking thing that my wife Gloria and I say when people call us, they're like, hey, how you doing? And we go, we're pandemic well. Like I'm doing pandemic well for my business, you know? I'm not burning up any charts, but my attitude is keep everything as stationary as you can until you pull out of this a year from now, mm-hmm. hopefully God willing a year from now. And then reassess and go, you know, at a higher gear. Like I'm at a gear business-wise, that is manageable and acceptable to me, but it's not the high point of my productivity or income rate for my career, no. How about you? How are you doing?
I was doing so good pre-pandemic. And in other words, again, I'd made fun of myself countless times on the show. I always start the year with this pristine calendar, and I'm marking it up. I'm going to do this, doing that. Yep. As you remember, I had two Kickstarters planned out for this year, and I had it all planned out in my planner. And also my wife and I in January had started this wonderful tradition where we went out to a local diner that we both like a little mom and pop restaurant that's right here in the neighborhood. And we would both, on Sunday mornings, we would take our calendars with us and we would go and get breakfast and coffee and then break out the calendars. What do you got going on for this week? What do you got going on for that week? And then even like,
Love this for you. I see this moment, and that sounds lovely and sweet. And also, it's the optimism of the year as a couple, as parents, as two business partners. It's optimism for the year ahead. So yes, keep going.
And
I'm sorry.
She was good because, like, I'd say I've got two Kickstarters, and I don't know how I'm going to do it. She says, "Well, let's set a deadline for one of them, and then on key points during that moment, I'll have it marked in my calendar so that I'll take the pressure off of you with any family stuff that comes up when you're at key points during that progress."
So yes,
she had it in her calendar, I had it in my, and that also forced me to say, if she's going to meet me that far, I got to deliver.
You got to step up.
I can't drag my feet now. I got to get that Kickstarter out, right?
So Tom and Carrie, just a pro tip for your upcoming wedding. Yes. This is how you do it. Listen
His
to Brad.
And hers calendars, I'm telling you. And plus, as we're doing it, you know, we're away, and our kids are old enough, they can be left at home alone now. they prefer it half the time. Yeah. But you know, it was all fine. And so we would sit there and we had all charted out. I was going to drive Alex Plays Ultimate Frisbee in high school. They always need a driver. Okay. I had X'd out all the Saturdays that I'd need to drive for them. And I had everything marked right up. We had long-term into the year plans, short-term plans, and I had two Kickstarters planned. And as we talked about in our, you know, plan for the year thing, I was really aiming for that. Mm-hmm. And by the time, you know, right now, just this morning, I didn't even know we were going to talk about this. I looked at that calendar. I haven't touched it since March because there's been no reason to touch it since March. Right. What do you put in a calendar? Like you said, it's every day, you know, Tuesday, Monday, every day, Wednesday. So I didn't put anything in it. It's been blank since then. My Kickstarter for the Evil Inc. After Dark book went out wonderfully. And that even I launched in April when everybody was like, is anybody can even support a Kickstarter? And I was like, yeah, they're supporting this stuff. Go for it. Prove it. Prove yourself wrong if you got it. You know, you go out there and if you're going to fail, fail big. And my fans backed it big time. But the pandemic also meant that a lot of things slowed down. For example, the printer that I work with in New York, they like a paper check, right? So I sent them a paper check about the same week that we replaced our Postmaster General, and his first point of business was to rip out a bunch of sorting machinery. A check that should have gotten there in 3 days took 2 weeks. That also, and of course, they couldn't package and pallet my books until they had the money in the bank, because not because they don't trust me, although they shouldn't. They've been in business long enough to know you just don't do that till the money's in. That added on a month to my ship date. I'm still waiting for the books to get into the harbor in New York, which should happen in a couple of weeks. But that all backed everything up, which means that now those books are going to come in October. I've got to hurry up, get those suckers out, and get the artist editions done, because pretty soon we're going to come to the end of the year, and I don't want to carry over any of that Kickstarter money, anything that I've got earmarked for postage, into the new year, because then I'm going to be paying taxes on it.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's going to now mean that I really, really hurry up and get that stuff done, even if I've got to go dark on the main comic strip for a week or two, because that's got to take precedence. And I'm under that kind of pressure for no other reason than all of this other stuff kind of piled up. And of course, the second Kickstarter, we're pushing off until, you know, spring of next year. There's just no way. But that kind of stuff, you know, wears you down. We had such a great start. And I've missed so many breakfasts at my favorite breakfast place. By the way, Kevin, if you're listening, it's the place that we went to when you came into Philadelphia.
It's all those little losses, and each one of them is a tiny grief. And that's why I keep coming back to grief as the operative word, because whether you're thinking about, even if it's this generic 13 million fellow Americans that are unemployed right now, like that's a feeling of grief. You're like, oh, all those lives have been disrupted. All those kids that are not going to school in a way that is in any way normal. That's a disruption. That's grief.
Yeah.
The funny thing is, too, someone had asked us on Patreon the other day, hey, what does this do to your 5-year plans? Remember, because I was the big proponent and pushing us to do a 5-year, a 2-year, a 1-year plan.
Yes, you
were. And I will tell you that my own advice to myself was like, all right, Dave, well, let's just put all of that on hold. That's now we're in, you change very quickly from, and I don't know what triggers this response, but I think it's the healthy response. Mm-hmm. You go into more of a each day as they come kind of a mode than a long-term planning mode.
Yeah.
Because frankly, based on just how badly our federal government has mismanaged this pandemic, it is conceivable that we will be well past summer 2021 before a significant percentage of the U.S. population is vaccinated, if a vaccine proves to be working, you know?
And like, if we can get some of these hammerheads to take the vaccine.
Yeah, exactly. So, and not a lot of people are talking about it, but kids aren't in the vaccine testing for this current round of either Pfizer or AstraZeneca or any of the bigger Western ones. So kids might not be able to get vaccinated in 2021. Mm-hmm. And so we might have a whole nother year of Zoom schools. Anyway, this might be with us for a while, yeah. Because all of that is dependent on this current vaccine working, which we still are in phase three and not entirely sure. So anyway, it's all grief is what it is. And it, well, for whatever reason.
And all of which to say, Dave, if you out there listening to this podcast are experiencing the same thing, you're not alone. Same reason that we talked with Erica Moen not too long ago about the importance of being honest with yourself and honest with others about your mental health and just trying to remove some of the stigma about actually talking about that. One of the reasons that Dave and I wanted to bring this up this week is just to say you're not alone. Feeling like Dave says, if you're going through grief stages and if you're sitting there sometimes staring at your drawing pad or your Wacom there that you're drawing on and you're like, there's not a darn thing I can do to this. That's, you know, you're looking at the blank screen saying, I can't possibly improve this screen by putting a mark on it.
Oh yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yeah,
it's like
yeah.
I don't even want to put a stylus to tablet because I'm just gonna any pixel I put down is not gonna help that blank screen. It's
right.
Okay being a blank screen, but yeah, if you're feeling that way, you're not alone. And take some time to feel it. And you know, if you're in the situation, you know, where Erica was feeling, where you really are feeling some significant, serious things, by all means, reach out and find some help. Don't take this stuff lightly. There's help out there. But mainly, if you're feeling this, you're not alone.
You are not alone. And I, who like to think of myself as an eternally optimistic guy, I'm pretty damn chipper to the point that I annoy people around me that I'm so chipper.
Not that you know of, no.
But like walking outside Los Angeles the other day and just it looks like a scene in a post-apocalyptic movie where mm-hmm. it's ash and literally ash raining down on you and the sky is blood red. And you're like, God damn it. Could we feel more like the last book of Revelations right now? Come on, world. It hit me. But I got to tell you, talking it out with Brad and with my wife and the people in my life, that it does make me feel better, Brad, even this like this little snippet of conversation we're having now.
No, it feels better just to say it out loud and to admit that yourself that you're not doing so hot.
Yeah, because you know what I mean? We're all like, I see other artists on Twitter like, I don't even know if I can draw a page today. I'm really falling apart. And it's OK to reach out to those other artists and be like, God, me too. You know what, pal? We're not alone in this. We're all doing this.
Yeah.
And
Well, listen, in the spirit of reaching out, let's reach out to one of our Patreon backers and knock off one of these questions.
Before we do, I just want to say thank you because I don't mean to burden you with it. And I know it's not a burden to you, but thank you for listening to me both on the podcast and on the phone. Because the last couple of weeks has been a little bit of a sad Dave as the ash has rained down on Los Angeles. So, thank you because honestly, your friendship has carried me through shittier days. And so I really do appreciate that. I really do. Thank you for
that. That is absolutely 100% mutual.
I'm a good man. All right, now jump into the next question. I'm sorry about that.
Okay, so let's talk about this. Let's get our mind off the pandemic for a little bit and talk about one of my favorite topics, Patreon. This comes in from Nathaniel, who says, hello, Brad and Dave. I do a short form comic strip that I post 3 times a week for my Patreon backers, I do an extra exclusive 4th strip every week. I offer that, including the entire archive of extra strips to all tiers, as well as early access to the other 3 strips. All right. That's what he's offering on Patreon.
Okay. Yep.
My question, am I giving away the store? Should I hold back the higher strip for higher levels? So, let's talk about giving away the store. The main nut of this question is, do I have too high of a reward at too low of a tier? What are your thoughts on that?
Right. And I, on some level, it doesn't matter what the numbers are, but can you remind me what numbers, like what level was the, was being offered at? $5, $10 level?
He's got it here. It's not worded super clearly. I've read it through a few times and there's some real, and okay. this may be some Patreon problems too. When you're wording your tiers, you've got to be crystal clear, but let's see if this will help. $2. All strips one day early, okay. Extra weekly strip, and the complete archive. $5, exclusive access to my full-page long-form comic. See, that's the first time I've heard about a long-form comic, right? All strips early, extra weekly strip, and complete archive. And $10, all my digital comics PDF download. Do you hear that sentence? Access to my full-page long-form comic exclusive. All strips are early, extra weekly strip, and complete archive.
Okay, so there's, yeah, this is a lot. There's kind of a couple considerations here. Is one is how much can you comfortably produce that's not mm-hmm. ruining your hand, your arm, your schedule, your mental capacity, right? And so it sounds like that's doable. But the second one is. Is this the appearance of these quote unquote extra strips, these bonus strips, their appearance on Patreon, is that the only place they will ever be seen? Will they eventually show up on the public website? Will they eventually be incorporated into a book? Will they eventually be sold on in some way, shape, or form? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, we always use that old axiom that Brad and I have been saying for years, which is draw it once and make money from it multiple ways.
Yes.
And I just want to make sure that this person, in offering these bonus strips, that these bonus strips are being sold, quote unquote, some other way, either mm-hmm. in book form, in print form, in on the website with advertising, some other way they're making money. And then also, so that's one consideration. The other consideration, Brad, is you can have a tier that's amazing. Like, I will draw something super specific, Brad, but it's only for 10 people. And yeah. then you have to ask yourself, like, okay, is making the money with those 10 people, but is that also artistically satisfying if only 1% of your audience is seeing this thing that you're producing. Does that yeah. make sense, Brad? You know what yeah. I mean? Like separate from money.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I've been talking too much. What do you think? Where do you come in on this?
Here's what it comes down to. A lot of people are worried and they use phrases like, am I giving away the store? Right?
Right.
And they're worried, do I have too high of a reward at too low of a tier? Am I giving away a $10 reward in my $2 tier? Which right. would be a problem, right?
Right, right.
Here's how you can tell. Here's how you can tell if you're giving away the store. If you've got 100 people at this tier that is at a lower level, you know that you could probably bump it up to a higher level. If you've got 100 people at your $2 tier and they're getting an exclusive, you know that at some point you're going to have to bump that up to $5. Right? If it's an overwhelming amount of people getting a reward that is an exclusive, if you've got a whole bunch of people there, then maybe you've got to think about at some point reorganizing that so that you're getting paid appropriately for that extra work. Now, conversely, if you've only got 3 or 4 Patreon backers total, you're not giving away the store. The problem isn't that you're giving away the store. The problem is what you're selling, they ain't buying.
Right.
At any price. Right. You've right. got a bigger problem there. You've got a problem of the exclusive that you're offering, they don't want or they're not interested in for whatever reason.
Right.
That means you've got to reorganize things in a completely different way. So there's two things you got to look at. In terms of this whole giving away the store idea, do I have a whole lot of backers at this low level tier? Now you might be giving away the store. Or do I have next to no backers or a very small number of backers? That isn't giving away the store. That's selling something nobody wants.
Right, right. Yeah, this is an interesting thing because it's also in the latter situation, it's more of a putting the wrong emphasis on Patreon at the wrong time.
Yeah.
It's more, the bigger problem there is that is sparking interest for anyone to back you on Patreon at any level. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so in that case, if it's just a few dozen people, a few people here and there, you're going to want to put the focus not on the Patreon, but on the comic itself. What's making them want to read it and want more of it, right?
Right. And this is why we talked a couple weeks ago about it, trying to not really discourage people, but putting a little bit of the brakes on somebody who's just starting out in doing a Patreon. And the reason for that wasn't to be discouraging, but to say there's a period of time that you really should be focusing on your craft more than anything else. And Patreon, although it's nice, ends up being a distraction. Here, let's say you've got a hypothetical person that just has one or two under 10 Patreon backers.
Right.
All of this, think about it. All of this mindset is going into his Patreon. Am I giving away the store? Am I doing this on Patreon? Am I doing that on Patreon? Right now, if that's what you're pulling on Patreon, you shouldn't be thinking about Patreon at all. You should be thinking about how do I do a good comic? Then the Patreon will come. And that's why we discourage people who are just starting out from doing a Patreon, because it pulls their attention away from what they really ought to be doing.
Yes. No, I think that's true. So much of this can come back to if the comic is good, boy, you can't get people away from your Patreon.
Right.
And then, you know, the flip side is also true, that if the comic is weak, no matter what you're giving away, if you're giving away the farm in the what level, what tier, it doesn't matter, because the comic itself is not enough to drive them there. So, yeah. That's a great point, Brad.
And don't forget, when we say strong and weak and all of those things, that might make you feel, oh, geez, maybe I'm not doing a good job. Perish the thought. Everybody does a weak comic when they first start out. Dave did. Scott Kurtz did. Erica maybe did. I don't know.
Even me.
I was waiting for you to jump in. I was going to see how many cartoonists I could name without naming myself.
No. But
everybody does a weak comic when they start out. Everybody needs to find their footing. Everybody needs to find their voice. Everybody needs lots of practice before they can get good. And I've got years and years of comics in which I was clearly learning how to do comics on the fly, teaching it to myself, and also taking good advice from credible sources and putting that to use and so forth. Everybody starts out doing work that is not so great. So when we say stuff like, well, you know, if you're only getting this and you're not to make you feel bad, not to make you feel smaller, but everybody starts there. What we want is for you to get better as quickly as possible. That's why we tell you, maybe Patreon isn't for you just yet, because it's distracting you from what you need to do. And the more mental energy you give the Patreon, the less energy you're giving to becoming a better comics artist. I feel the same way about social media. I think a beginning cartoonist should have a heartbeat on social media, but you see so many times, you know, people who are, they post hundreds of times a week. And then one of those posts, number 101, is why I wonder why nobody's reading my comic. Well, it's because you're spending so much time on social media that you're not spending any time getting better as a cartoonist. That's why we kind of talk about this stuff. So not in terms of trying to make you feel small, but in terms of saying everybody starts at a very low place, and it takes time to get better, and it takes focus. And these things that take your focus away maybe aren't so good of an idea.
Yeah, and in general, though, I want a big picture idea.
Yeah.
Is that with Patreon, all these exclusives, if they don't continue to make you money down the line, either in book form or something else, really take a second look at them. Because if they're not bringing you income at the point that they are created for Patreon, like, for example, if there's only one person at that tier and you're creating a whole cloth comic for that one person, really take a look at why you're doing that. If it's not to make it for a book down the line, if it's not to eventually roll it into the website. I get very concerned about cartoonists being like, I will create an entire Russian ballet performance for you, the two people at my $40 tier level. You know, like, hold off on promising the moon if it's only for one or two people. If it doesn't work, you can fold that tier and say, hey, everybody, let's bump you down to a different level. That didn't work out, whatever path you need to take. But I just want you to be wary about overcreating for a very small number of people at a small tier that doesn't bring in enough money for Patreon. Just something to think about.
Absolutely. And speaking of things that we're telling people, Dave, yep. I need to tell you this. You've been listening to Comic Lab, the show about making comics and making a living from comics.
Your hosts have been my friend, the eternally optimistic Brad Geiger, the editor of webcomics.com and the cartoonist and creator of Evil Inc. at evil-comic.com.
And the avuncular and delightful friend, Dave Kellett, co-director of Stripped and cartoonist of Sheldon at sheldoncomics.com and Drive at drivecomic.com.
And the Comic Lab theme song is used with permission from Andy Creighton at theworldrecord.net. And this episode and all episodes was edited by the ever-delightful Matt Woodard of Woodsong Productions over at www.woodsong.media.
If you love Comic Lab, you can rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts. And you may hear your review featured on a future episode like this one. This one came into us, I think this might have come into you through Bonjuro, Dave. It says, "Hey, Dave, you and Brad have an amazing podcast. I'm a graphic designer, moonlighting as a saddle maker, relaxing as a comic artist." which is a great little chain there,
that,
right?
Yeah, it's a series of tasks. That's awesome. I don't think we've ever had that before.
We have to talk about saddle making. That's got to be an interesting avocation, right?
Yeah, working with leather in general. Boy, talk about an entirely different skill set than anything I have. Wow.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Plus, that smell is great, right? Nobody doesn't like that smell. So Comic Lab, this person says, Comic Lab has so much actual down-to-earth advice on running a small creative business, not to mention the hilarity and joy of a perfect bromance. Do we have a bromance?
I guess we have a bromance.
That I feel more informed and confident in my fledgling solo endeavors. However, the jury's still out whether my daily vocabulary is helped or hindered by the additions of, quote, "I say this in friendship," which is a Dave Kellett exclusive right there.
I say this in friendship. Do I say that a lot?
Oh, yeah. Oh, you. I think you invented that term. I say this in friendship. The first time I ever heard it was you.
Wait, do I say it to you or do I say it to listeners?
Whoever's slowing down long enough to get those sound waves, you're saying it to. it's a very wonderful way to set up something that they might not be willing to hear, right? "I'm saying this in friendship" means that you're going to hear something you're not going to be crazy about, but we're still going to be friends afterward. It's a really nice phrase.
I honestly don't remember saying that, but that's interesting that I say it a lot. That's funny that I'm not aware of it.
So helped or hindered by the additions of, quote, "I say this in friendship" and, quote, "Mwah. Chef's kiss." I couldn't even do that right. Mwah. So she says, "Thanks, y'all." That came from Brittany. Brittany the saddle maker sent that in.
You are awesome. That is fantastic. I am so excited that you have all three tiers of creativity that are benefiting from the show. That's amazing.
Yeah,
and the saddle making is most exciting. Brittany, also, much like Tom and Carrie, I want to see photos of the saddles you make.
You've got
to email Brad and I. I want to see those saddles. That's awesome.
That's right. And listen, Brittany, I say this in friendship.
America.
Don't forget who uses a phrase that you also should like, and that is champing at the bit, which is a horse phrase that gets misused all the time, that this guy right here is doing a one-man crusade on getting it right.
I like that the one guy in the English language that doesn't say chomping at the bit says champing at the bit. But he's so proud of that fact.
Yeah.
And so proud of the fact that you ruin everyone's lives when you tell them that it's not chomping at the bit. Because now for the rest of my adult life, I will hear chomping at the bit on TV and I'll be like, wait, no. No, it's not chomping at the bit. It's champing. Brad, you've ruined my life. You have ruined it.
Just tell us how Comic Lab is made possible and get done with this.
I'm going to say Comic Lab is made possible by your support at patreon.com/comiclab. So we'll go ahead and say that twice exclusively for Brittany. patreon.com/comiclab. Brad, just buy an old set of, like, a used but perfectly good set of Apple headphones. Just get the Get, you don't want to buy the Schmapple off-brand. Just spend a few bucks, for God's sakes, on, you don't have to get the pro ones. Just get some sort of Apple Bluetooth headphones. Just go with that.
I'm sorry, what?
Forget it! Good God! Ah! Ah, that's the best possible way to answer that. Dave, I saw your lips moving. Ah, so sorry, I missed that entire thing.